Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. Hosted by Dr. Don McDonald, author of the best-selling book, The Underdog Curse. We give vitalistic chiropractors a chance to learn from the best around the world, discovering how they overcame their challenges and achieved success. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Now listen up. It's time to crush the curse.
Are you a people pleaser? I know I sure am. And when you mix that with being a chiropractor, it can create a lot of trauma. I know firsthand, it can wear away at your health, your relationships, and your practice. I term this the underdog curse, and I've spent the last 15 years coming up with a solution. My book, The Underdog Curse, was written to help others live a more authentic life. This is very challenging if you're externally influenced. When you take an externally influenced person and have them try to spread the message of chiropractic, it can be very challenging. If you'd like to get back to who you really are, regain your health, strengthen your relationships, and increase your worthiness, please visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Underdog Curse today. Remember, if we take the time to nurture ourselves, we are much stronger at serving others. For chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host, and today I get to go back down to New Zealand. I have a lot of chiropractors and friends and people that we've connected with that are down in the New Zealand area. My next guest, she's been in practice for almost 20 years, just like me, just about the same amount of time that we've been in practice. She's practicing in Wellington, New Zealand. She was the second vice president of the Chiropractic Association down in New Zealand. And her name is Dr. Louise Blair, and I would love to welcome you to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast, my dear.
Good morning, Don, or afternoon for you. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I know. We always have to, when we're setting up these time zones, it's a little bit kind of crazy, but I'm starting to figure it out now. So if it's my afternoon, it's going to be your morning on the next day.
Yep. It is, yeah.
That's awesome. So, tell me a little bit about your practice right now. You have a few associates, right?
Yeah, so I've got two associates at the moment, and I'm actually off to interview someone else to join us next year from the graduating class coming up.
Yeah.
So I've had a big practice with lots of associates. I went down to just myself, and now we've expanded again.
Right, you're going to do it all over again. Take over the world, yeah, or take over Wellington.
Didn't learn the first time.
Well, life's about continually evolving, right? So that it's lots of fun. It's no fun to just do the same things over and over again and not learn new skills, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I like to believe we'll do it better this time.
There you go. Each time you do it, it's like, we're going to do it better. Right. So let's go back with all my guests. I always like to find out, how did you even figure out about this crazy thing called chiropractic in the first place?
So as a teenager, I had lots and lots of migraines and I was missing heaps of school. And when I look back now, I'd had tummy aches when I was a little kid. So I think it's all the same story. And my mum was seeing a chiropractor because she'd fallen down the stairs. Mm-hmm. And they'd done all this exploration on migraines and headaches. And I'd been to the doctor, I'd been to the physio. I was taking habit-forming painkillers as a 15-year-old. I mean, who gives that stuff to kids? And mum had been called to school again. She had an appointment with the chiropractor. She wouldn't let me stay in the car because she was grumpy with me and made me come in. And James assumed I was there to be a patient. And my life changed.
No way. And so did you start care right then, or did you set up something then, or how did that work? Or do you remember?
No, I can't remember. I remember the argument with mum in the car. I remember the first time sitting in his reception, and there was this enormous poster, like a picture painting portrait of him that was, I don't know, gosh, it must have been like, what's bigger than A1? It was just this huge picture of him in reception. And I thought, goodness, where am I? And this sprightly, I thought he was really odd. He was probably only in his 60s. Man came out full of energy and talked to mum. He had no receptionist or no CA. And then he said, oh, and is she here too? You should be adjusted. And mum's like, do you look after kids? And I don't remember what happened after that, but I remember it might have been that day. It might have been the next time walking out to the car, and he toggled me And I was like, I am never going back.
And that's hilarious.
No explanation, nothing. It was just like, here's your x-rays, lie down. This is what, you know, very old school.
Yeah.
And, and he put me in a gown and I was 15 and, you know, my undies showed. And and luckily my mum said, that's non-negotiable. And my life changed. I stopped missing days of school. It's like that. But I didn't realize what a miracle it was because I'd do what I was told and then I'd know better. So I would drop out of care and then I'd go back. And I was a very non-compliant teenager who knew everything.
Right. That's hilarious. I think that's what everybody thinks is, I wish I was back to a teenager when I knew the least, but thought I knew the most.
Yep.
That's awesome. So was there a defining moment where you decided to be a chiropractor, or did it kind of sort of evolve over time?
I think it evolved because I'd wanted to be a neurologist. And I when we were little, we went to church and this, he must have been a neurologist, came and talked to us all about brain surgery and how this leading frontier, and I don't know why it was in a church service, but anyway. and I remember thinking, oh my goodness, imagine being able to work with the brain of who someone really is. And so at that point, I know I wanted to be a doctor and I wanted to go on and be a neurologist and blah, blah, blah. And then, but medicine hadn't helped me. Medicine had really let me down. So I was kind of like, and then just gradually seeing James and over the years, I went, actually, this is kind of cool. I could do this. And my parents didn't want me to be a witch doctor. And my school counseled me against it. They said I needed really big muscles and you needed to be a man. It was, and I look back and it was the 80s. It wasn't like the 20s. And then I talked to James about it. I got up the courage to talk to James about it. And he said, oh, well, you definitely don't want to study in Sydney. You want to go to Melbourne or to Palmer, which was where he was from.
Yeah.
And in the end, I went to Sydney. But he was really encouraging and positive. But it just evolved.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I enrolled, and then I thought I injured someone in third year when we were doing extremity adjusting in third year, and it really, really freaked me out. I thought, oh, I'm going to go and be a proper doctor and sit on the other side of the table and never touch anyone because that's better. And then I drug ripped for a pharmaceutical company for 3 years. So
oh,
that's
wow.
that's the skeleton in my closet. I was a drug rep. And the thing that struck me the most was there were the GPs that were really passionate and loved what they did, they didn't have time to see us reps. You know, they were busy and they weren't going to be told what to do by the drug companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were a lot of doctors, and there were doctors who thought that my job as a drug rep, where the only person who knew if I went to work was my computer when I typed and logged the doctor's call, and they thought I had a better job. And there were all these doctors, we used to call them the knife and fork brigade, who'd go to every put on dinner. You could eat out every night if you're a doctor in Australia, and or you could in the 90s. I don't know if you still can.
Right.
And I was thinking every chiropractor I knew at that time was passionate and talked about what they did and loved what they did. And so, you know, I'd taken some time out to work out what to do, and it just became really obvious that that's where I wanted to be. So I went back at 26 and finished chiropractic.
Okay. So you completed your first 3 years.
Yep.
Before you took a break.
Yeah.
And how long did you work for?
So I did my first 3 years as an undergraduate, but it took me 5 because I was having a party.
Yes.
And then I worked for 3 years, and then I went back and actually put my head down and did what I was meant to do and finished the master's part of the chiropractic in the next 2 years.
Oh, that's interesting. So how was your philosophy, or how was your knowledge of chiropractic, you know, coming into school? Did you kind of understand kind of the idea of chiropractic before you went in, or did you have to discover that after you finished school?
So I don't know if you know John Kelly, but John Kelly was our philosophy lecturer, and he'd talk about chiropractic philosophy, and we had to learn the 33 principles, and I didn't learn them, but I'd heard them. And so I kind of had this idea, but I still was grounded in this very Western medicine you know, what you grow up in, what all our patients grow up in, you know, that's the soup we swim in. Yeah. And so I kind of would hear things like people say, oh, someone got pregnant or someone's diabetes got better. And I think, oh, I wonder how much spin there is in that. But it's great for headaches because my life was changed. And if at that point, if someone had said, all you'll ever do is help people get rid of headaches, I still would have thought that would be really fulfilling. So my philosophy wasn't that good. And going to Macquarie, let's just say it wasn't enhanced. And it wasn't until I came to New Zealand and worked for Trevor Pond and had a very challenging conversation with Simon Kelly that I started paying a bit more attention to philosophy.
Okay, let's get into that. That sounds cool. So you graduate.
Yep.
And then did you were you just doing a locum or were you just coming? How did you decide to go to New Zealand?
So I took this job, which was really sounded really cool. This woman, her name was Robbie McNeely, and she's since passed away. But Robbie had this practice, and she did dental cranial and lots of SOT and AK and NET and all the kind of really cool stuff.
Yeah.
And I went to work for her because she'd wanted to give back to the profession. But I was a brand new graduate. I just couldn't look after any of her patients. Most of the people she looked after were actually referred from other chiropractors who'd got stuck. Talk about pushing your underdog curse. I had no clue.
Yeah.
And so I'd sit in this room and I worked out this one day that I would have got more on the dole. I don't know what you guys call it, but, you know, the unemployment benefit than I was earning as a chiropractor. And so I was reading the CAA magazine and there was an ad for a locum in New Zealand. And this was before mobile phones. I went out and called from a payphone on the street.
Wow.
And that was on Tuesday. And I flew here the following Sunday, which was actually Easter Sunday. Actually, I think on Tuesday this week, I'll have been in New Zealand 19 years. So I flew sight unseen and forgot to go home.
Okay. So how long was that? Cause that's interesting to see how, like for me to just imagine going somewhere to visit and never going home is kind of like crazy. So like, was it a long position or was it just like for a couple of weeks and how did that even go?
So they wanted me to commit for 2 years and I wasn't sure about committing for 2 years. So I said I'd commit for 6 months and it was really weird because I still signed a 2-year contract. And then I think I wasn't brave enough. Like we had this verbal agreement, but I still signed what they want, you know.
Well, you don't want to rock the boat, hey? You don't want to rock the boat.
Neither did they. You know, everyone, it's typical of associate agreements. We walk around the edges, don't we? And then everyone gets unhappy. But so I came and then, so I worked for Trevor Pond. I don't know if you've heard of Trevor. He's actually since passed away as well. But Trevor just was fantastic. He loved adjusting. He was like, just be quiet and adjust them. Just adjust them. Stop asking questions. It was perfect for me because I question everything. Just adjust them. And I was like, but why am I doing the schedule? Because it works. Just do it. And he'd say, this is what you do. And at the time it was very Parker-esque, 3x4, 2x6, 1x8. And I'd go, but why? And he'd go, after you've done it for 6 months, we'll talk about why. And it was really, really good to have someone that, because I can tend to be quite self-directed and want to run my own show. So it was very good to have someone who was just like, you want to play? He was great. Around that, there was, you know. And so I just did what he told me for 6 months and I x-rayed everybody and it worked, you know, it just worked. And so then I started listening to people like Fred Barge and Sid Williams and the internet, 1999, the internet was just getting started. So they were on purpose had tapes and.
Yeah, I remember those. I had those tapes.
Yeah. For a while then my car was littered with tapes and CDs. But really it was just listening to people and reading by myself and then asking questions of the chiropractors around me. And the first time I met Simon Kelly, he introduced himself and he went, oh, hi, I'm a chiropractor. You're a medipractor. And that really challenged me.
I could totally see him doing that too. He's so cheeky, isn't he, that little guy? He's so cheeky.
And it really got my hackles up, and it made me want to understand why he thought he had the moral high ground.
That's awesome. Hi, metapractor.
See, now I've said this in public, he'll know.
That's great. Oh, he'll love it. He'll love it. He will.
So then I met a Kiwi. I got married, and suddenly I had roots here.
That's crazy. And so, so you had that associateship. It was associateship, right? And then you obviously have your own practice now. So how did you transition from being an associate to getting your own practice?
So I was in this associateship, and there was a lot of pressure in the role brought in by their circumstances. And I now see, I was young and arrogant. I'm just older and more arrogant now, but I didn't understand the dynamics about the business and the financial aspects. And I look back now and realize they were quite stretched, quite thin, which made them put pressure on us. But I didn't hear that in that way. I heard that it was always criticizing, and I wasn't good enough. And I just kind of went, I'm sick of this. So I left and went and worked for another chiropractor down the road, which was much more of an independent contractor arrangement. I paid him rent. There was minimal guidance, minimal CA support, lovely CAs, but they were receptionists. They were receptionists, and they sat on their bum behind a desk.
Yep.
And I was there for maybe about 18 or 19 months, a bit longer, about nearly 2 years. But over that time, I had two babies because, like all chiropractors, I didn't use contraception, and somehow you get pregnant again at 18 weeks. So I had two kids who are 13 and a half months apart. And then just before I went on maternity leave with Josh, who's now 14, Trevor's practice went up for sale, I was too proud, even when I was at this other practice, to go and say, I miss it, can I come back? And so it was for sale. And naively, I thought, oh, if I buy that, I can be part of the team and I can have this group of colleagues around, and how about I buy the practice and get everything I had before? Without actually realizing I had to be the boss and I had to be the leader, I thought I could just create this collegial environment. So I'd had Nick, and Nick was the perfect baby. If it was in a baby book to happen at week 6, Nick did it at week 5. He was always ahead of schedule. He slept. He was just perfect. And I'm like, I've got this mother thing. It's all about me.
Yeah.
Nothing about the baby. It was all my amazing motherhood. Yeah. And so we signed to buy the practice in October. Joshua was born in January. We took possession of the practice in April. There was a gap between one associate leaving and another associate leaving. So I went back to work, I think, in February for 2 weeks while my then husband looked after the boys and was bringing Josh in every 4 hours to be fed. I have no idea what I was thinking, but it all just worked. And
it's hilarious. Actually, interviewing a lot of women chiropractors, it's amazing the stuff that they do to, like, with that, with the kids and the practice and balancing that all. And it's crazy.
Yeah, so Josh didn't sleep. Josh had reflux. Josh was hard to settle. And I suddenly went, actually, it wasn't me that was the great mother. I just had this amazingly placid child.
Right.
But I also think all that pressure and all that busyness did, my stress translated into Joshua's. And, we created a highly strung little baby.
Right. Yeah. So they can kind of pick that up from the environment that they're in.
I'm sure he did. Come on, you're hungry and I've got 3 minutes to feed you. Get on with it, bud. Hardly conducive to a baby eating and sleeping well, is it?
Right, that's funny. And then when you just continued on, like, how did that go? Like, once you kind of got rolling in that practice and the kids got a little...
So we bought the practice, and I inherited two associate... Oh, no, I inherited one associate. I chose the associate where there was that gap. And then Trevor went back to Australia and we brought another associate in. So there were four of us. I was 34 with no leadership skills, no management experience whatsoever, with two babies and running a business that was turning over $500,000. You know, it, a real recipe for smooth sailing. So I learned a lot, trial by fire. I crashed and burnt with associates and made mistakes that I'd never make again.
Well, and again, we want to get into some of those because I totally want to get into some of the learnings of that. But
yeah, and then crashed and burnt, totally trashed my marriage. So he and I split up, and so that all came to a head in 2011. So if I look back from 2004 to 2007, from the outside, it looked amazing. We were doing corporate talks. We had great referral rates. We had patients who loved us. We had a business that was humming. But I feel like it was built on the wrong foundations, and it just got more and more and more pressured. And so my marriage imploded, which always changes other things, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I took a really long look, and so I downsized the practice. The associates that were there when I became more clear about my expectations about what the relationship would be going forward, both of them chose to leave. And I went across the road. I think I took, I think it's about a third of the space that I had before. I still had rooms, but I just didn't have as big rooms, and I have a lot of corridors, and I didn't have, it wasn't quite so grand an office. And a friend, David Kelly, from Johnsonville, he came and helped me out because there were too many patients. It was beyond my capacity. So he came and helped me out for about 9 months. He'd come in at lunchtime. So he's got a suburban practice. So his mornings and evenings, he'd pop into David's just amazing. He was so wonderful. And he just came and worked for 2 hours across lunch, 4 days a week. Was it 4 days? I think it was 4 days a week to help me out. And it really was good. I got time to sit back, lick my wounds, work out what was what, and then go, actually, I now have the capacity to give back again to the profession. So take on more associates and mentor people again.
What were some of the biggest learnings in that time when you were like kind of licking your wounds? What were some of the insights that you discovered that you would say I'd probably do differently the next time I'd have associates?
Well, that clarity around what you expect from an associate. So I was mentoring with Russ Rosen.
Mm.
Russ had told me before, he said, you've got a cancer here, you need to fix it. And I went, so dramatic, what would you know? I didn't say those words, but you know.
We just say it in our inside voice.
But I did. I thought he was over talking it, but actually he was right. You know, these things start insidiously and they grow. So I'd listen to the people around me, and I listen to people more. I don't necessarily do everything they say, but if I have an instant you're wrong, now I go away and really quietly think about what was that about that push my buttons, and is there truth in that I need to look through? Much, much more clarity. And I think some of that, Don, you know, just comes with being older. You know, we get older, we get more confident. You know, some of it's just wisdom. You know, you've got your gray hair and your wrinkles, and with that goes a little bit of, I'm going to set it up so we don't have this drama.
Right. And
actually realizing that I love looking after patients. I really love that, and watching them grow and thrive and their lives change. And, you know, does it happen to every patient? No, but, you know, if you create the right environment, it happens to more than less.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love watching people around me grow and thrive. So, you know, I love watching my children grow up, and I love watching the associates find their feet. And I love watching my CA, Kieran. Really, she's just, over the last 18 months, really grown into this wonderful leader. And so it's just, I've realized that I enjoy that as well as the patients, and it's okay to see less people, to have the capacity and energy to give to those people as well.
Right.
So you don't need to I don't need to see 300 patients and mentor people. It's okay to see less and mentor.
Yeah. And it also is, it's a lot healthier for you too, because you know, we draw our energy, and as chiropractors, we know this, that we need to have our energy high. When we're seeing patients, practice members, it's not like that we're sitting behind a computer where if you're feeling exhausted and burnt out and scattered in your head, that you can't just like, oh, I'll just wing it. Like you can try, but they can tell, right?
Oh, they can. And you know, they're always the days when they ask you the difficult questions, because I think people, when you're not there, patients feel you're not there, so they try and get more out of you. And that's when this patient asks a question and you kind of go inside, go, oh, do you have to do this now? And then the next person, and then you're running late. And so then everybody wants a bit more because they don't want to feel rushed.
It's like that. Never end. Yeah. And then by the end of the day, you're like, oh, exhausted, right? That's cool. Yeah. So you went down to a smaller practice and then you had help part-time. And then you started to grow again. So talk about like how that started to kind of to grow again after that.
So, David said he wasn't going to stay. He wanted to focus on his practice and he'd bought another practice. So he wanted to focus on two practices. And so I kind of had a decision to make. Do I increase my hours? Do I work faster? Do I just say this is capacity, or do I get an associate again? So I went through that process and I went, actually, I'd like to have a colleague. I'd like to have someone else with me. So advertised. And then someone who'd previously been an associate with me was in Australia and called up and said, oh, I want to come home and I'm seeing your advertising. Can I come back? And I went, and she went, I've changed. I promise I've changed. And I have just enough Labrador in me. Like, you know, we've talked about this on the Vitality Shift. I am a wolf, but I was born in the year of the dog. So I have a Labrador in me as well. And I like my people to be the same peeps around me. And so I was like, oh, and you've changed and you've evolved. And she came back and, you know, she was still the same person she was, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I just don't think we should work together. So that reminded me about clarity and reminded me about my values. And it's better to wait so something really works is what you want. Because, you know, Marie was easy. And, you know, adore Marie, catch up for a glass of wine. I just don't think we'll ever work together again because we're very, very different. And so then that made me start thinking about what to do. And then I got I advertised and went, right, I'm going to be really clear about who I want and what I want. And so since then, we've been much more clearer. And at the moment, I've got two wonderful, wonderful young female chiropractors who are just on purpose, on fire. The office values all resonate because we've chosen people well.
That is awesome. And what kind of advice might you have for chiropractors out there that might be thinking, hey, maybe I want to bring on an associate. So what's the kind of, maybe give them some tips or stuff about mindset or how to go about getting an associate.
That idea of writing out a list of all your wish list, mm-hmm. and then your not wish list or your non-negotiables about what can't be there. You know, for example, and this is quite an extreme example, but if I had someone apply for the job who smoked and was terribly overweight, no, you know, right. But there'll be more subtle things for each of us in our own practices. And don't feel desperate. You know, the reality is we shouldn't, I feel quite strongly about this. I think if you're not thriving, mm-hmm. don't take on an associate to cover your bills. I think
that's huge.
As a profession, and this is something if I'm never going to win lotto because I never buy a ticket, but I do say if I won lotto, but if I won lotto, I think I'd stop practice and work out somehow a better model for the way we look after our young, because I don't think we do a good job in the profession. And I think it's structural and systemic with the profession, because who mentors young people? It's people like me and people like you and other people you interview. But we're too willing to believe poorly of each other. If an associateship goes wrong, people are too willing to believe the principal did something wrong. We often don't talk to each other when associates move. So when Fred, who was with me or with someone else, leaves because they believe they failed, which really doesn't mean they failed. They just didn't, that they need to grow somewhere else. We don't talk about what are the mentoring things, what are the things that happen, and how can I better serve this person. It's always, we just listen to the associate. This is my experience. And you and I spend a lot of time and money that if we were really just focused on the money, we could be better seeing patients and just earn more money. It's more cost effective to see the patients yourself.
Totally.
And so there's no, and the profession encourages associates not to stay for 5 years. You know, when associates been around for a while, other chiropractors go, when are you going to leave? When are you setting up on your own? So I think we've got a profession that doesn't support long-term associates and doesn't see that as a valid career move, doesn't see it as a sign of success. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we have principals who've never been trained in coaching, never been trained in mentorship or leadership, who have busy practices because they're good with patients, or don't have busy practices because they're not good, suddenly go, I'm going to mentor a new person. It's a recipe for disaster. And if that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you take on brand new grads, do you have a process of how you go through to educate them and to support them?
So they have to do X number of things. So they have to observe X number of new patient visits, X number of reports, X number of progress exams. They have to spend X amount of time tagging along with me. They have to spend X amount of time at the front desk watching the CAs, watching them do everything so that they understand exactly what that's about. And then I have a training program that includes time they spend. We've got a lot of resources on our server of things like the Vitality Shift, videos we've recorded, teaching them how to do things. We've got PowerPoint videos that train a new CA how to do a progress exam, to do a scribe during an exam. So the chiropractors have to watch that so they're doing the same exam. And then we go through why. You know, well, why do you think we do these tests, not those, blah, blah, blah. And then we also do a marketing plan. So there's marketing things they must do. And have you heard of BNI?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was the first New Zealand chiropractor to join BNI.
Cool.
Many years ago. And my ex-husband is now the director for BNI in the Lower North Island, or Wellington, because I introduced him to it.
Oh, wow.
It's one of the things they must join a BNI chapter, because mm-hmm. A, it helps bring people in, but B, those 60 seconds, that's, you know, how do you describe what you do? How do you create a network? Yeah. So, and then we
actually, you know, actually, can you just describe what BNI is? Cause like I had BNI and I was in it and our new associate's in it too, but maybe some listeners might not know what that is.
Oh, so it's called Business Networking International. It was set up by a guy called Ivan Meisner in the US, and now his wife was a CA for a chiropractor. So there's
really?
I got invited to a BNI open day with Ivan Meisner talking by one of my patients because he'd known that about the CA connection. And he goes, are there any chiropractors in the room? And I put my hand up. And so he was like, oh, you've got to join, because chiropractors do really, really well in BNI. And it is challenging, and it is at 7 a.m. in the morning. And, you know,
and you have to go every week, right? You have to commit. Yeah. Boom.
You're only allowed, one or two absences a year? Mm-hmm. But you can send a sub if you're on holiday. But it's just great. It's good personal development. But you've got this little team of usually small business owners who are all in your corner, all looking out for each other's success, which I think as a new graduate or a new associate, whether you're a new grad or not, somewhere new, it's really nice to have a network of people who've got your back, as well as the office.
Yeah, that's it. It's so interesting. Our new associate, he just joined BNI too, and he's finding the same thing. He's just really enjoying it because you kind of get, especially if you're brand new to a place and you don't have connections, it's kind of nice as social network. Because I know when I first was in BNI, we hung out with them. Even you kind of create new friends and stuff too.
Still from BNI.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So you'd recommend them to do that. And then do you have regular trainings for?
So I meet with each new associate to begin with twice a week. We have one of those mentoring times is a clinical time. So we talk about patients, what they could do, where they're stuck, how they're going with their languaging. So it's very much a clinical time. And the other one is a structural admin growth time. So separated, going out and hunting and finding patients to actually what you're doing in the office. Because it just works better for me to separate them. And I see that when we do that, they grow better and they're more confident sooner. And then we have a team meeting every week. And actually starting on the 9th of April, we were trying to do training and meeting together, but that's not really working. So we're starting earlier with training, having a coffee break or a tea break, and then having the meeting and then starting patients. So we're splitting it out from next week.
Okay. And wasn't it you that said that you're going to wear Lulus at your team training?
So because it's on Monday, which is my non-patient day. So if I time it all right, I can go to the gym and turn up to work stinky and do the meetings.
Because inside our Vitality Shift, we always I record a lot of our staff trainings so that we can watch them. And Brandy's always in her because she's the same thing. She's coming right from the gym and she's doing our staff training. So it's always a fun way to do it. Yeah. That's cool. And so that has been now you're going to grow another one, right? So you have two associates and now you're looking for another one as well. Is that just because everyone's getting so busy, just the growth or?
Mostly that. Jennifer, who's with us, is on a visa and we haven't had confirmation her visa is going to be approved. And so I'm aware that if she leaves, we have a problem a challenge. So I've been talking to this young chiropractor for a number of years since before he started chiro school. So if Jennifer leaves, he's going to walk into a patient base. And if Jennifer doesn't leave, then we'll just step everything up again, market more. And it'll give me, I've got this passion project I'm working on called ROAR, which is Real Health for Audacious Women, which is based on chiropractic foundations, helping busy women stop getting burnt out. And I'd like to spend a little bit more time on that if I have the flexibility to do that. So, So, you know, he can pick up some of my patients and I can just only work 3 days a week.
That's perfect. Now, we always like to talk about the burnout stories. Do you have any good examples? Because this is probably something that you've gone through and that's why you're kind of inspired to help other people, right? Yeah. So maybe you can share maybe a story or two of time where maybe you got a little bit off balance and what you did to kind of get back on the road again.
So I've realized this is me. I am flat out or flat out. I don't have an off button. I don't have first gear. I'm either all on or all off. So I've had two episodes where I really crashed and burnt. And now I look for the signs of, I describe it as flirting with burnout. And I know when I start doing certain things, it's time to pull back.
Yeah.
When I was at uni, I had two jobs. I was at uni. I was partying lots. I was having a great old time. and I got glandular fever and never got better. But I guess you'd now call them an integrative doctor or a functional medicine doctor, but he was a GP who did all the really weird and wonderful homeopathy, naturopathy stuff as well. And, you know, intravenous vitamin C, high dose vitamins, you know, really, really sorted me out. And so then I went back and did it all again. And and I think I was running on adrenaline for that whole 2004-2011 period, but I don't think I really kind of crashed in about 2009 and I started taking everything a lot more seriously and looking after myself. I really did believe that if I ate well, had vitamins, got adjusted, I could be invincible.
Right.
And that's not true, is it? But I've never really taken time off work. I've never crashed and burnt so much that I've had to take time out. But I've always, you just dial it down, recover. I've learnt that I love road cycling. I love endurance road cycling, but I've just learnt the training to do 160-kilometer events or centuries is what you guys would call them. Mm-hmm. And the patient load I have and being a good mother and being a good wife and pretending I can be a good friend is just unrealistic.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've looked after myself so much better since my first marriage ended. I've met this lovely, wonderful man who is very good at keeping me grounded and loves living life busy, but is also very good at stopping.
Great.
And he's just amazing. He keeps me very well grounded. And now I know, like, if I do things like I start salting food a bit too much, I go, you're putting salt on your food. Let's just, and it's a huge, you know, that craving of salt for your adrenals. It's just such a flag for me. If I look at it, I go, yes.
And so
start being kind to yourself.
Yeah. And so if you notice that, do you have like a ritual or something, or do you just like sit down and look at your whole schedule and say, okay, I got to cut some stuff out? Or do you say like, that's it, I'm going to bed early? Or like, what do you do to kind of recalibrate when you're off?
Oh, so I'm a nana. I like being in bed at 9:30. We start work at 7. So I like being in bed at 9:30.
Yeah.
And so what I do is I go, right, I'm not going to get up and cycle at 7 o'clock on the weekends as well. I'm going to sleep in. And if that means all I get to do is an RPM class and, you know, weights, so be it. You know, I'm not doing those big centuries anymore. I'm just riding for fun now.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I go, right, okay, let's cut down the coffee, let's cut down the booze, you know, and I'm not a big, I have 2 coffees a day and I'm not a big drinker, but you know, you just cut out the things that you don't, that sap your energy, even though you think they fill you up.
Right.
And I use an adrenal support range, and these days I just take one of everything every day.
Just to stay on top of it.
That this is the cost of my lifestyle and being passionate, because the world doesn't get changed, Don, by type B people who are sitting on the couch. The world gets changed by people like us.
Yep.
As long as we don't let that make us sick, I actually think the world is a better place.
That's 100%. Amen to that one, sister. That's great. Now, tell me a little bit, because again, you're in the Vitality Shift, and we have a community where we're talking all back and forth. And you're doing some cool stuff with your CAs, right? You're getting them more involved. Can you maybe tell the listeners a little bit about what does it look like in a practice that you get your chiropractic assistants to get a little bit more involved in what's going on to help out the chiropractor and support them more?
So I'd always really struggled with taking what I was learning at a seminar or when I've been mentored by or coached by different people and translating that back into the office without it being right, this is what we're doing. And I feel like I'd explain it, but we weren't really getting everyone on board. And I hazard a guess that I kind of go A, B, Z to people and I forget about all the other letters in between.
Yeah.
And then I go, come on, how come you're not at Z with me? And so just we met you guys at Fiji on Fire. What year are we now? 18. So we met you in 2016.
Yeah.
And started following you and Brandy. And then I read your book when it came out on Amazon. And I thought, well, this is quite cool. And Brandy's posts, because of your time difference, they're the first thing we see in the morning. Well, no, sorry. Well, if you look at Facebook, you're always there every morning, or she's always there. And so then we signed the CAs up to follow Brandy as well. And so we'd start talking about what Brandy had said in the office, you know, the now international Brandy meeting. And
yeah.
and then so I brought two of the CAs to Fiji on Fire last year. And so when you guys mentioned you had your program, A, they were there and were like, oh, can we do it? Can we do it? So for the first time ever, it was something driven by them, not by me. But Brandy is, and I don't think it would matter whether she was your wife, a CA or a chiropractor, she's amazing with words and helping people hear what they need to hear to feel empowered to do it. And so the CAs, their confidence by hearing that Brandy's a CA, she does it, your CAs do it, the chiros are on board, and it's also we had the right team. I really think there was part of we had the right people on the bus at the time. Jennifer was had finished her preceptorship with us, hadn't passed her New Zealand boards, and so she was kind of this super CA where we could get her to do some clinical stuff, but only so much. And she, I don't know if she even realizes, but she acted as an amazing bridge between us.
Yeah.
And just everything worked. And now, because I'm not always good at following a system, I'm the one being told by the CAs that I'm not doing the Vitality Shift right.
That's hilarious.
Come on, I'm the boss. You can't tell me I'm not doing it right.
That is so funny. That's hilarious, but that's good. So they're getting quite involved. And do the CAs help you out with the exam and objective findings at all?
Yep. So our CAs do, what do they do? They don't do a pre-exam because I actually like, so no, pre-history, sorry, because I actually like to do my own history.
Yeah.
They, from the moment we finish the history, they come in and they're scribing and taking notes. I tend to do the tests on the new patient visit myself and just go, we're doing this to look at this, we're doing this to look at this. But after that, they do them at the progress exams. But, you know, if we're running late, I would just do the things I have to do and go, now, Kieran or Agnes are going to do this. And then I ask them to do them in a way that sounds like the doctor's ordering the tests. So I go, okay, so what we're going to need to do with Fred is you're going to need to do the marching test, the cerebellar sway, the bilateral, yeah. And I just run them off as though I'm ordering these tests. And more they're doing it. And we've just had a restructure. So Stacey, we needed to go to 3 full-time CAs. So Stacey didn't want to work full-time. So she's leaving and we're getting a new CA. And so that CA is going to learn that you do those tests and we're going to step right back from doing the tests from, well, she starts on the 9th, so from when she's up to speed.
That's pretty cool. And you had a late night little post in our community about your the job description. Can you tell a bit about that? That was pretty cool.
So I did plagiarize it. But you
That's
know,
great. Yeah.
All the best stuff's vaguely stolen from somewhere else. But just, you know, it's so much better to be clear about who you want to join your team, isn't it? You know, and so we use, Russ taught me a deselection process. You put your interview out, you invite everybody in, or you put in a couple of directions in the interview. If they meet those directions, everybody comes to the interview. And then at the interview, you just deselect them down. So I thought, well, let's do a little bit more deselection before. So I had seen someone else's ad for an admin assistant for a online business. And I showed it to Kieran and said, what do you reckon about this flavor? And she just went, oh my God, fantastic. And so we just tweaked it. And basically I can't remember. What did we say? If you're high energy, if you can juggle multiple things with a smile, if you love people, if you don't get freaked out by technology, but this job isn't right for you, if you can't be punctual, if you're not available for 6:45, if you have drama that you bring to work, you know, so we put a whole list of not just what we want, but who we don't want.
That was great. Like, do not apply on this if you're like, bang, 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 bang. That's great.
Yeah. And it was interesting. We had one person ring up and challenge us and tell us we were unprofessional. And we went, whatever, you don't belong in our team.
Right. Well, it did its job. It cancelled you out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was quite funny because he said, I'd love your job. And I think, and he was saying how much our job would be perfect for him, but we're unprofessional. We're like, whatever. And so it's just evolved like that. That used to, you know, 5 years ago, I'd have told you my CA ad was very direct and, but it wasn't then. It wasn't as much. Yeah. So, but it's just fun, you know, we give people in the ad, we say you must send a covering letter, send me your CV, send a covering letter telling me what you bring to the table. So if they just sent me a standard CV and letter, they didn't get invited for the interview because they can't follow directions.
That's so important.
Yeah.
That's so important. Yep. Well, that's awesome. Well, the time flew by. We're already getting right to the end. My goodness, that was awesome. So like I like to do with all my guests is give the last few minutes to give any words of inspiration to the underdog nation out there, people who might be in practice and struggling or frustrated or feel like they're kind of stuck. And what kind of words of parting wisdom would you share with them?
So what I would say is, you know, we deal with subluxations, and if subluxations is less light, I think we need to let our light shine for us to help other people have their light shine. And the thing is, if you ask in the profession, there are always people will help you. We have an amazing profession with so many people who will give, but who may not stick their nose in unless you tell them that you'd like them. There's always people around to help you, and there's so many resources to become the chiropractor you want to be. So I would just say, trust the process and go out there and shine.
That's amazing. Yes. Here, everybody, get out there and shine. A few things I really got from this is getting clear up front, right? Especially with your staff or associates, and be the example. So we got to look after ourselves, because if we're not healthy and if we're not thriving, it's really hard to look after our people. So thanks very much, Luis, for being on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Cool. Thank you, Don. Really appreciate you including me.
Yes. No, it's going to be, I think people get a lot out of this. It's very good. So everyone out there, like always, don't forget to go out there and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.